This is a coastal story, written and presented by Charlie Connolly. He was born in Canterbury, Ambrose Gwinnett, in around 1698. He came from a fairly well-to-do family. His father sold sailors' clothing, known as slops, at the sign of the Blue Anchor. When he turned 16, Ambrose was apprenticed to a lawyer, and 5 years later, in 1709, it looked like he had a bright future. Until he decided to go and visit his sister. Elizabeth Gwinnett had married a mariner named William Sawyer, who'd retired from the sea and opened an inn on the Dover Road just outside Deal on the coast of East Kent. On the 17th of September, 1709, Ambrose Gwinnett set out from Canterbury on foot. He'd underestimated just how far it was to Deal, and by the time he reached the town, night was falling, he was exhausted, and he just couldn't face the extra 3 mile schlep to his sister's pub. England at that time was caught up in the War of the Spanish Succession, and there were a number of warships in the Downs, the anchorage just off the coast at Deal. That week there was also a fair on, making Deal a lively place to be for Ambrose, but also one where it was all but impossible to find a bed for the night. When he called at the new inn, he found the landlady there to be a friend of his sister's, and she promised she'd find him somewhere to stay. Led through to the back parlour, Ambrose was introduced to Richard Collins, the landlady's uncle, sitting by the fire in a nightgown and cap, counting some money. Reluctantly, Collins agreed to let Ambrose share his bed. He picked up his candle and led the way upstairs. At 3 o'clock in the morning, Ambrose woke with what he called a colic with the most violent gripes, which he put down to the bacon and cabbage he'd had for lunch, washed down with a big glass of milk. These gripes were serious enough to wake his roomie, who directed him to the facilities, a wooden shack at the end of the long garden, backing onto the sea. "You may have difficulty opening the door," he said, "the string being broke which pulls the latch. I'll give you my penknife, with which you may open the latch through a chink in the boards." As Ambrose put it later, "I apprehend I stayed in the garden pretty near half an hour, for I was extremely ill. By overheating myself with walking the previous day, I'd brought on the piles, a disorder I'd been subject to from my youth. These seemed trifling circumstances, but afterwards turned out to be of infinite consequence to me." When he got back to the room, Ambrose noticed Collins wasn't there. He called his name a couple of times, then climbed into bed and went to sleep. He rose early the next morning, still with no sign of Collins, and left for his sister's. In the late morning, Ambrose was sitting outside the inn on the Dover Road talking to his brother-in-law, when 3 men galloped up on horseback. One grabbed him by the collar, waved a warrant for robbery and murder in his face, and announced, "You are the king's prisoner." He was taken back to the inn, where a tearful landlady spat and called him a cursed wretch, who had murdered and robbed my poor dear uncle. He was taken upstairs to the room where he'd spent the night, and when the landlady pulled back the bedclothes, he saw the pillow, sheets and bolster soaked in blood. When he was searched and Collins's penknife was found in his pocket, it didn't look good for Ambrose Gwinnett, especially when he learned that a trail of blood had been found leading from the street outside all the way to the sea. Clearly, Collins had been murdered for the money Ambrose had seen him counting by the fire, and his body thrown into the sea. Ambrose was carted off to Maidstone Prison, tried and sentenced to hang from a gallows placed outside the new inn. His body was to be clapped into a gibbet on the road out of Deal afterwards, at a spot not far from William and Elizabeth Sawyer's place. The appointed day brought some filthy weather to the Kent coast, and the gathered officials, militia, public, priest and prisoner were soon soaked to the skin and lashed by gales. The formalities were rushed through. Ambrose swung, He was cut down, his body clapped into the gibbet, suspended by the road as a warning to other would-be murderers, and everyone went home to dry off. Later that day, a young lad was driving some cattle along the road when he stopped to stare at Ambrose's corpse, only to find it was staring back at him. Our executed hero was alive. So quickly had the hanging been carried out in the dreadful weather that he hadn't been quite dead when he was cut down. Slowly he was regaining consciousness and would make a full recovery. When the boy got over the shock of being fixed in the gaze of a dead man in a gibbet, he ran off to fetch William Sawyer, and once darkness fell, Ambrose was cut down and hidden in the inn. If the authorities discovered that their hanged murderer was still with us, he'd have to swing again, so plans were made to move Ambrose out of the country, at least until the heat was off. Eventually, two officers from a privateer moored off the coast took a room at the inn, and when presented with a young man in need of a job who ached to go to sea, agreed to take Ambrose on as an under-assistant to their ship's steward. 6 months later, they were off the coast of Florida when the vessel was boarded and captured by the Spanish. The crew was taken prisoner and sent to Havana, where Ambrose would spend 4 years in a Cuban prison. Eventually, when the war was in its final exchanges, he was led out with other prisoners and prepared to board a ship bound for England. "This, as you may believe, was a disagreeable sentence for me," wrote Ambrose, "taking it for granted that a return home would be a return to the gallows." He'd become friendly with the prison governor, whom he persuaded to spare him the voyage and take him on as an assistant instead. It was a pretty rotten job. Pirate ships were being regularly captured, and barely a month went by without Ambrose being attacked by members of the latest scurvy crew of arrivals just as he went about his duties. After 3 months in the job, a ship arrived at Havana from the Spanish settlement at Port Royal and offloaded a scatter of English prisoners. One of them, Ambrose thought, looked kind of familiar. "Sir," he said, "were you ever at Deal?" The man's eyes widened. He grabbed Ambrose by the shoulders, tried to speak, but burst into tears instead. "If you were ever at Deal, and are the man I take you for, then your name is Richard Collins, and I was hanged and gibbeted on your account in England." Later, Ambrose sat down with Collins and finally learned the truth of what happened that night on the Kent coast. Earlier in the day, Collins had gone to a barber surgeon to be bled, and when Ambrose had left the room with the gripes, realised his nightshirt was soaked in blood. Bleeding profusely from an incision in his arm, he left the inn to knock up the barber and have the bleeding stopped. Once on the street, he was immediately surrounded by a group of men wielding cutlasses, who dragged him onto the shingle and conveyed him to their privateer. The ship's surgeon rebandaged his arm, but Collins was kept on board as a cabin servant, until their vessel was also captured by the Spanish, and Collins ended up in Havana too. The two men made immediate plans to return to England to clear Ambrose's name and secured passage on a ship in the harbour. Now that should have been the end of an extraordinary story, but there's more. On the day of departure, Collins boarded the ship and Ambrose went to say goodbye to the prison governor, and the ship sailed without him. In the years that followed, he endured further adventures involving more pirates, another run-in with a Spanish prison, and a period in the galley of a Spanish warship, during which he lost a leg during a fight with some Algerian pirates. He didn't get back to England until 1730, by which time his family was all dead. Collins, it transpired, never arrived, and is presumed to have died during his passage across the Atlantic. Ambrose spent the rest of his days as a beggar with a wooden leg on the streets of London, becoming a well-known face for the many years he spent sweeping a road crossing at Charing Cross, occasionally getting to tell his extraordinary story. Not surprisingly, the tale became as much myth as truth. According to the 19th century writer George Borrow, Ambrose's story was taken down by the Irish poet Oliver Goldsmith in exchange for a dinner of calves trotters. It was first published as Ambrose's first-hand memoir during the 1770s. Now, some say it was a fiction created by arch satirist Jonathan Swift. It might be coincidence, but the date of Ambrose's arrest is also the day Dr. Johnson was born. A theatrical adaptation of the story, called Ambrose Gwinnett, appeared in the 1830s, which, as if it were possible, hammed up the story even more, underpinning the tale with a love triangle involving an unscrupulous blacksmith. In 1839, a very similar story appeared in a few newspapers, claiming to involve two friends sharing a bed in Gravesend, to which many correspondents pointed out that the true story was that of Ambrose Gwinnett. Ambrose's tale was often used as an argument against the death penalty, and in 1881, no less an organ than the Daily Telegraph insisted the story was entirely true. Now, I've searched for documents and can't find an official record of Ambrose's execution. There are a few oblique references to an Ambrose Gwinnett of Canterbury, a Richard Collins with a connection to Deal is recorded as dying in 1709, and there are burial records for a William and Elizabeth Sawyer in Deal a plausible number of years after the incident. Even the New Inn is still there. I wonder if, on the anniversary, the occupants of the pub are woken in the night by the sound of violent gripes. Or just afflicted with piles. That was A Coastal Story, written and presented by me, Charlie Connolly. You can find us on Facebook at Coastal Stories Podcast, and you can find me on Twitter at Charlie Connolly. If you're enjoying these tales, please do rate and review them. It's all algorithm grist to the podcast mill or something. The waves you can hear were recorded on Deal Beach on an ebb tide on the 9th of January 2020.